This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're on location in Bethesda, Maryland with poet Tom Mandel. And Tom has a history in the world of poetry. You're going to hear all about it. And we're going to start with an opening poem. Here's Tom.
Hi, Grace. It's great to be here. What is there to perfect other than yourself? Arranging the objects on your desk or in your room, yet they vanish and new ones appear to be dusted between more pressing projects. Look, the book slides into a spot on the shelf. Or at least I find you instead fallen among my intentions like rubble or an hourglass that keeps asking to be turned.
You never disappoint me, Tom. You never disappoint me. You are the surprising poet. So I want everyone to know about the most recent book you've published and the book that is going to be published, because I know you have produced 20 books of poetry and chapbooks, but you always have one in the hopper.
So I do. I write all the time. So I'm just lucky, you know. Well, the most recent book is called Letter to Poetry. It came out in 23. And unfortunately, I don't have a copy of it with me. So if I need to read from it, perhaps I can read off the screen. I don't have a copy because we are, it's a long story. We're flooded out of our apartment. But my new one, which is fun, is called hasn't come out yet, Simple Syrup. And Simple Syrup is a book of folk poems, I call them, and phony songs. So I'm known as an avant-gardist. Well, to the degree that I'm known as an avant-gardist. But these poems are not. They're rhymed, and they're a lot of fun. And I think I'll say one to you now because I happen to know this one by heart. It's called The Legend of Hand and Glove. When glove lit out for parts unknown, hand was on his own. He faced a future that seemed bleak, for would not strong give way to weak? To locate glove and lure him home, hand began to roam our land, until one day, washing in a creek, hand ran into other hand. And there was nothing more to seek.
Mm.
Now glove was on his own.
I am buying the first copy because we know you as a philosophical poet, as an intellectual poet, with country music lyrics sometimes, always mischievous, all of these things. And this is yet one more dimension, fable and folklore. And phony what? What's the title?
Folk Poems and Phony Songs.
Perfect. Okay, and when can we expect to see that on the shelf?
Well, I certainly hope some publishers are watching this show because I haven't even sent it out. Call me, push me, pull me.
I have never known you to become unpublished. Honestly, no. You've never been naked a day in your life.
No.
So read us two more poems that are Tom Mandel.
Okay, will do.
I'm going to interrupt just to tell them a little bit about you, that you have 20 books, as I said, and you've been published in, I think, the greatest anthologies in the country, including The American Tree, the Norton Anthology of Postmodern Verse. So that gives you an idea of who he is. Best American Poetry, many times, and Poetes Americaine. Born in Chicago. Tom was educated at the University of Chicago and has taught in many universities, and I'll name them all after his poetry.
Oh, well, that won't take that long. As you repeat the words of his lesson, the master appears to nod, but he is dying. In his eyes, a world seems to recommence. His temples are destroyed, memory fragmented with the lonely authority of unspoken words. Your people dead, buildings down, city at my mercy, yet you resist. Turning within a few square pages, compact, monotonous, unvoiced, victoryless, a perfect snapshot of the formulated text. Not stasis, neither gnosis is your goal. To know more, the speaker must change. Feel so different. The exact transmission of our rigorous oral tradition.
To know more, the speaker must change. Have another. Let's have another.
Momentum yearns to break the shape of thought, to fly away through the square of window behind his head, social maladjustment that would live in revision. Open confidences made to train his eye, slit the bodily frame, its suitability taken to himself with love, skill of human hand in a medium whose existence is an absolute of justification, water spilling from the fountain, all the village dead. A range of tonal value lays beyond the absolute, where objects organized to express causes whose effects they may yet become, a valley, measured vision, linen sheets.
Killer last line. Tell me, I know now you went to the University of Chicago, for sure. This, yeah. It's all over you. But I knew your work and I knew about you before I met you. I mean, for years, your name has been predominant in American culture, and you were called a language poet. And so I'd like you to tell us what you think that meant then and what you think it means now. And I'll tell you what I think it means. You first.
Sure. By the way, I've been reading from from Prospect of Release. Language poet. First of all, I am a language poet. And language poetry is it's a movement. It's a bunch of people, a bunch of friends and we met in the 70s of the previous century, long ago, and mostly in either New York or San Francisco. Although there were a couple of Washington, D.C. poets who were associated with us, certainly Doug Lang, the great, great, great Doug Lang being one of them. Doug, whom I think about every day.
Me too.
Yeah, I love him. I love Doug. And really, as with most of these things, if we were to go heavily into the theory of language poetry, we would all lose our focus and begin to fall asleep, because theory lasts long enough to get you into motion, to make you work, to make you do things. Then after that, theory falls away, and it's the work itself that's there. And essentially, we had a sense that too much of poetry, that poetry had become a kind of endless same story about some individual personal moment of personal experience, poem after poem, each one different, which meant that each one was the same because they were all essentially on this form. That's the sense we had. Of course, that was never entirely true. Of course not. But so, but still, that's where we started. And we began to think about what makes poetry poetry. And we turned to to a guy named Louis Zukofsky. Some people may not know, but Zukofsky was a great poet of the early 20th century. And he was, he described poetry as a figure of calculus, upper limit music, lower limit speech. And that is what worked for us. And I highly recommend him to anybody who hasn't read him. It's a great discovery.
Is he ABC? What was the title of his book?
A. Yeah. A. And there are 24 sections to A, and they're great. And if we had a couple of extra hours here, I could read you some.
Maybe we need to have a Zukofsky special later.
Sure, let's have a Zukofsky special anytime you want.
I'm going to tell you now what I think language poetry was, and I think sure. It almost fits what you say. You're the authority, but as following you through the years and trying to read up a little bit on it, I always thought it was a political movement because it eradicated sex and age and gender. Took away the narrative so that we had a real clean view of the poem without the detritus. And that, as far as deconstructivism, but I I wonder, that sort of fits into your paradigm, yes?
Yeah, very. Oh, it's
You know.
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I don't, I that's really seen from, if you turn the object to a different angle and look at it, obviously the object looks different, but it's the same object, and you have just given us another angle on it.
Well, you know, you also have been a leader in the avant-garde movement, but lately you're trashing the term avant-garde.
Yeah, I think it's
Why
a,
is that?
oh, be, well, I could say two things. The first is it's is this has a little bit of a comic aspect in that it's my way of having an argument with my good friend Barrett Watton. Avant-garde, everybody claim avant-garde is a historical term, just like any term. It was invented in the early 19th century, and it was brought into being as a term to try and position poetry as something that would ch change the world and make it more just, which is a great goal that we all share. But in fact, to my knowledge so far, now I may have missed something, but to my knowledge so far, and especially looking at the current situation in America, I can't say that I think the avant-garde has brought about much positive change.
I didn't know it had that intention. I thought it meant advanced poetry because you've been on the cutting edge. Like if you're a surfer, you're on top of the wave. And
Yeah.
that is a, we have to always be, Ezra Pound said, make it new, make it new. And you have certainly carved away all the dross and you've made it new. So I think that is, avant-garde is a perfectly good word. But now I
Yeah.
want two perfect poems from Tom
Sure.
Mackail.
This is again from Prospect of Release. All winds howl, but one does not take up another to work the artifice of our destiny out. In dreams, we see truth. The dust they raise with their feet reaches the divine throne. A figure hunches in a formula of sparks that speaks a hammer's blow. Not stasis, not gnosis, your goal. Hold out for the first thought, the best thought. Think and wait. The giver of the lesson studies himself, teaching all day until his own soul hangs from life as a thread hangs from torn clothes. Want another one?
More, please.
Here you go. This is one I like a lot. Like knees, unabandoned mind must bend, and the category of person be the soul clothed in time, the garment of a paradise it has constructed. I prefer baked cake to a handful of wheat. For nothing is known without interpretation. Unarticulated, a letter absorbs death, binds its end to end, whereby the past avoids the present. A day of rain, another day of dew, alert us to confusion, close our hands. Pages blow past, petals on a wind, and bring days singly. Spoken things I learned from him bring meaning. Heeding this word, a document springs to life.
You know, it's organized spontaneity. It is completely fresh. But language poetry and your poetry, present day poetry, which is quasi-language and more a little bit moving toward, there is some narrative in there, but there's always in every poem one seed that we could have a seminar on. For instance, nothing is known without interpretation. Now, that was just one of the phrases in the poem. We could talk about that in a Socratic room and forever. So you always hide one little thought amidst the imagery and the phraseology, which I'm on to you. I'm on to you.
Good,
So
good.
tell me how jazz has informed your life, because I know that you hung out in clubs. You said you're educated in jazz clubs. I hope your mother doesn't know that. And
Oh, yeah.
you
Well,
are really a jazz scholar, but how does this get into your DNA so that it informs your poems?
my mother did know. I used to try and sneak into the house at 3 a.m. when I was 15, having come back from the South Side of Chicago and the Sutherland Lounge or the Modern Jazz Room downtown or one or another such place. And my goal was to make it to my room, you know, like the way a kid does. If I get to my room, I can close the door. But it was rare for me to get through my room without hearing from my mother, who'd been up all night worrying about me for no reason. People took very good care of me when I was in these jazz clubs as a little boy. They
Whoa.
did. They took great care of me. They did. The relation, you're asking about jazz and the relation. Well, jazz was for me, and I would say probably for many of my age, jazz was the art. It was there. It was big that back then, but much more visible than it was than it is now, really.
Oh,
Oh,
yes.
sure, yeah. I mean, and especially from Charlie Parker, Sonny Rollins, John Coltrane, we had a period, and Miles, we had a period where jazz was very present in the culture, and where now it isn't as much.
But what is it about you that was summoned to this sound that electrified your life? What is it about you? What did you need? What did you want from this? What did
Oh,
it tell you
I
about
want, of course,
yourself?
I wanted, well, I was a per, I was a kid. I was a kid whose father had, I mean, if we're going to get into this, my father died when I was 4. He had been in a French, not German, concentration camp, picked up a liver disease of which he died. Life was a circumscribing thing in a way. We had just gotten to America. There was very little money. And anything that constituted an exit from whatever seemed like, and in the end, it wasn't a limit of any kind. It was out that from which I have grown. But anything that seemed like an exit from that was immensely exciting. So I used to go to bed at night in Chicago, listening to with the radio, the tube radio was hot in my bed because so my parents wouldn't hear that I was
Oh.
listening to. Blues, rhythm and blues, and jazz as a way of escaping from, although I don't like the term escape really, as a way of extending myself into the world as quickly and as far as I could. And that really has always been my goal.
That is the best definition of jazz I've ever heard. An entrance and exit to yourself. I really, really am touched by that. Have you written your memoir?
Well, my friends and I, the 10 of the language poets wrote a 10-volume collaborative autobiography called The Grand Piano, and it's named
Oh,
after
yes, I do know that.
And the Grand Piano is named after the project's named after a coffee house on Haight Street in San Francisco where we used to have a reading series. I coordinated the reading series for about 6 months, then somebody else coordinated it, and then somebody else, and we passed it around the group. And that was enormously formative, of course, because it was once a week. We all got together, heard one another and others, and it was great. And so, yeah, I have written autobiography in the sense of that. I've participated
So
in
you have
that.
one chapter that's Tom Mandel.
There's 10 books, and no, I don't have one. And in each book, each of us wrote an essay. So there's
Yeah, but
10 of
you
my
see,
essays.
but I wanted something down and dirty about you. I want your own story. You're in your bed with a radio. What happens next? I want the Tom Mandel. I want the truth. But now I would like two poems, which are always the truth from Tom Mandel. He has taught at the University of Illinois, University of Chicago, San Francisco State. He was the director of the, is it the SFSU Poetry
Yeah,
Center?
San Francisco State University Poetry
Yes.
Center.
Yes.
I was director of the Poetry Center for 1 year before they fired me for being excessively avant-gardist.
Oh,
That's
but I
okay.
can't imagine. San Francisco was so full of hippies. You must
Well,
have
you would have
been,
thought so, right? But
you. What should have
that's
been the
not how it happened.
king? So he has been a consultant to UNESCO, and we will get into his technology expertise later. He invented the computer and the internet. However, right now, well, almost right now, we would like to have how you invented poetry. Tom Mandel and Grace Cavalieri are together again for the first time.
A gram in the scale, the coal in the brazier fumes and glows. There is a sense it consumes to which I slump and cannot reach. My love washed her clothes in a well of solitude, her hair in a well of tears. I console myself for her absence with this apple. Its roundness is her hip, its smell is her hair, her lips, fresh fruit, time, full and time, grinding in streets, empty blocks between them. Time passes, its empty cup, its lovely pleasure, taste, that make you real, like honey. And when you taste it, you cannot imagine you will die. And when you don't, you cannot live.
That would be a love poem.
And yeah.
And I know there's more where that came from, so hit us.
Oh, okay. Let me see if I can...
That's not from Letter to Poetry.
No, that's from Four Strange Books.
Because you have an awesome love poem in Letter to Poetry.
Oh, I have the poem that I wrote for Beth. I wish, you know, I don't have that book, and I wish I had it. And if I had a minute, put my hands, but we can't do that.
You're in a temporary dwelling with no books. You are flooded out, and you're good enough to put on your clothes and appear for us. So we'll take it.
Even if I wasn't appearing for you, I would almost certainly put on my clothes. In the misery.
Always a gentleman.
What does the sun know of oblivion compared with those who know the sun's oblivion? The moon reflects your face, oblivion. A crop comes up in the field, a crop sowed with affection rises from the soil, stems reaching like new fingers, children of a blind, unfulfillable desire. In the misery of self-regard, soul expires. My soul would expire except your presence. No, your essence. I only imagine your presence, whose love rejoices in my heart, exults like a seed bursting in my heart. If I speak to my ear or listen to my voice before the tree of knowledge, as happens rarely, if I hear my own heart and nourish myself before the tree of life.
You were at the University of Chicago's Committee on Social Thought.
Yeah.
That had to be pretty wild.
That was fun. I studied with Hannah Arendt for many years.
Really, really, really?
Many years. I was very close with Hannah. She had a huge effect on me, more on my life than on my thought.
What one thing do you take from that? If you could just distill it.
Well, I'll tell you a story. I'll tell you just a really quick one. She said to me once, Tom, this is her voice, Tom, knowing better is not a kind of knowing. I sat down and shut my mouth.
She was a language poet for sure.
Oh, she put me in my place many times.
An exquisite remark, really.
Yeah.
So that formed you. And what do you think all of those things did to make you the poet you are? I mean, you were a social activist. You were a jazz scholar and aficionado, and you were really kind of a good guy. I mean, you were a buddy. You had friends. You were a good friend. So what does that all mean?
Well,
the
single most important thing that any human being can feel is gratitude. Because you're here.
Amen, brother.
And
also, it's the highest spiritual principle there is.
Yes, and being here means that, yes, you can do
anything.
Whatever comes next. I mean, do your best, you know, but whatever comes next, just do it. And so in that sense, I've had a great life. God, I have a great life. And to be able to write poetry is a privilege, because many people do not have that privilege.
Is that what you taught at these universities? English, poetry, philosophy?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, I taught whatever they would give me a salary to teach. It goes without saying. And I started teaching at the University of Chicago's Downtown Center when I was almost exactly when I was 22. I had just graduated. I had just graduated. I had just gotten my BA. I really needed the work. I was a graduate student, starting as a graduate student, and I was already married. I had a baby kid.
Oh
And
dear.
so I needed to make some money. And they were kind enough to give me this gig. And I taught my students in the downtown center of the university were by and large, they were students at the Art Institute. And by taking academic courses, they could get a BA instead of just a BFA, so which was a more useful degree. So we had so all my first generation of students were all artists, and they were my age.
Perfect.
They were the same age as
Perfect.
I.
Just what you needed.
Yes,
Yeah.
right.
Well, I'm going to move in and out of your life and in and out of your poetry. So give us some more poetry.
Sure. This is called, oh, what difference to make what it's called? Holy form truths refracted through words, which though made to hold such truths, impose material imperfections upon them, will, in the case of an attentive mind, climbing back the refracted path, attract by their comely grain. Perhaps more or less than art or science, but in the same way, physical labor involves a lack of contact with an escape from reality, truth, and beauty, constituted terminologies of the universe as a minute idea, and with the fixed wisdom that glosses over its gorgeous foundation sunk in the orderless absolute.
You are so right. Physical labor is an escape. It is, isn't it, from
Yeah.
reality.
Yeah.
But
And
nobody said that before. You see, that's what I like about you. You say things for the first time and act as if you're just brushing a fly off your shoulder. You say many things for the first time. And now that is a philosophical principle we could talk about. We don't have time, but it is true. Why do we do stuff when we're in pain or want to escape from any feeling? Why this productivity of ours is truly it's giving us away, isn't it? What are we running from? Well, whatever what you said before, I want to capitalize on now, where Emily Dickinson said, we dwell in possibility, and you are saying the same thing about your life. You're saying, I'm here. As long as I'm here, everything's possible. So, somewhere along the line, someone inspired you to think that you could do or be anything.
yeah,
That's pretty important.
that would be my mother.
That would be pretty important. Were you the only child?
Oh, no, I have a younger sister who's a terrific person, Lisa. She's an economist.
Wow. But you have the feeling that the world is here for you, that you're
You know,
not
that's
afraid of the
really true.
world.
That's really true. I have It's always better to be lucky than to be smart.
Well, are you lucky?
Oh, I'm unbelievably lucky. And the greatest luck that in my the greatest luck in my nature, that is, your nature is what you're given, right? It's luck. It's not something you create. It's your nature. And the greatest luck in my nature was and is inexhaustible curiosity and desire to have experience.
But do you know, I am older than you are, but we were not allowed that. Little girls were not,
I know.
they were not led toward that. Weren't allowed to take clocks apart and see how they worked, or to work on maps to see where you went, because you were supposed to be a passenger in life. So that in a way, we had to overcome a little bit more than that. Some of us made it through the terror to be what we wanted to be. But you're saying you were given that belief from a mother who loved you so much and believed you were undauntingly so special.
Oh yeah, because well, for, I mean, just structurally, you know, her entire she had lost everything. She was a Jew from Vienna. Some of the family got out. None of my father's family got out. Some of her family got out, but she'd lost the life that she was a medical student. She lost that, and
No, I want you to start
obviously.
writing this today. You are going to start from just any pointillistically, whatever comes into your mind. This should not be lost. She should be made permanent.
I'll say
And
she
so
is
I think,
permanent.
yeah, but you haven't written enough about this. I think your memoir is the next thing after Simple Syrup. It will be Simple Tom.
I don't have it handy, but I have a long poem that does talk about her, I'll make sure you have it, Grace, and we can pass it out however anybody wants to
Yes,
get
but
it
you're
there.
avoiding my saying you have to sit down and write your memoir.
Well, I mean,
I know you think you have done it in dibbles by just dropping it into your into your poetry. I know you think this is my portrait. It's here, it's there, but that's not the same as, don't you like prose?
oh, I love prose. I've written plenty of prose. But, no, it's a great idea to write a memoir. The problem, or really to write an autobiography, I don't like, for some reason, I have a negative response to the word memoir. I like autobiography,
Oh,
is it, you know?
it's because you can't speak French.
I speak French perfectly.
Memoir. Okay, we will have a final poem. I'm so sad to leave, but perhaps this can be part one of
Oh, well, that would be fun. And
Tom Mandel.
anytime.
And yeah, because we
Yeah.
have lots to talk about. So this is the last poem by Tom, but not the last time you'll see him.
Okay. Stop me when you're ready. Hungry and waiting. Everyone here has the same idea. My hand is of destroyed gold. An asseverated fountain breaks dirt with the red flowers and herbs that climb out of the garden so slowly that they glide down the comfort of the hill for years. The enameled glow of my time slides through life like dimes through a nickel slot. An amorous glow surrounds them and attaches a part of their size to the single temper of a radial cloud as latent colors pile up in the impervious backwater of love below. All stars of morning singe you, giving orders to endure. During that meeting, her war was flashing errant targets and wished flirtations. A liquid and a glass are near, but not so near as the illusion of touch is a gas, stable and distended like a marble in a mirror. At an angle or otherwise, we float under a thin crust of wisp, ourselves a great unconscious born on edge in the unhinged plane, peeling away to radio. Oh, this is so long. Peeling away to radiated paleness. I'll skip some. A black stripe trails downward across the stormy quadrant from the point of the sun's last crust to a touch of horizontal memory. We turn back to black, heart to smoke, cloud to a descending blues.
It's beautiful. I think we just probably got it truncated, but that was beautiful. And who
That's
else but
cute.
Tom Mandel would say dimes through the nickel slot.
Yeah,
And this is the poet and the poem from the Library of Congress. And the program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipet Fund, the Rivada Foundation of the Logan Family, by friends of the program, Natalie Canavore and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.